doesn't have a red light. That's
maybe
the
that's
the problem. I mean, this would be maybe a cementus to you. This is no, we came to think of that actually, you know, over the years, at least I can see for myself that the training we're getting, I mean, should be much, much more. Yeah. And that probably, I think also devotees would be more happy and proper, but actually really wanted devotees, few devotees to be brought up to be very high class.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, having a lot which are not so very trained. So then we come up with the idea to, well, in practical terms, we'll try to run 1 week every month for all devotees in a temple, that is, and Sangha devotees, to stop everything, and then have seminars on different topics that's related to devotees. And at the same time also have like a curriculum or study plan for each devotee so they can, when they join, for instance, the temple, and they can see, well, we have ahead of us 5 years, and we're going to learn this and this and this. After the end, we're practically going to be, in one sense, almost like having joined the Vaishnava University. So then, and then that time, then we are fully educated Vaishnavas, and then we can engage us in whatever we are inclined to, as you know, as Vaishnavas. Some are inclined to brahminical and renounced life, like sannyasis, brahmacharis, others, they could get into household life, probably, you know, live outside the temple, engage in some kind of occupation, you know, take part, you know, whatever.
Very good.
So, I mean, I think the concept is right. Of course, if you can do it practically, it's ultimately an economical question, but it's, I kind of believe that if Krishna he wants it, we can do it.
Yeah, the subtle always turns, gross always comes from the subtle.
Yeah.
Let's talk, we just talk hardcore business. Business started in someone's mind.
Yeah.
That's the sign. You know, it wasn't just the guy suddenly, you know, sat there and just, without any thought, you know, just collected together some stuff.
No, no.
It always starts from the subtle and goes to gross.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's very important to
understand. Yeah, yeah.
So devotees need to be trained in your basic things. Everybody's got to be trained in the philosophy, like that, and starting with the Gita. I mean, what Prabhupada mentioned is Bhakti Shastra, the Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion, Vishwapanishad, International Gita. Because then you understand the philosophy, and we're not the body, we're the soul, and then what are our duties? Nectar Devotion gives us actually the process, how to practice devotional service.
Yeah.
And the Vishwapanishad, Upadeshamrita then refine, you know, give further detail on that, Upadeshamrita for Nectar Devotion, Vishwapanishad on the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
So that should be very well known, not just that they have shlokas memorized and have, you know, your analogies and your different terminologies and all that, but they should also understand the principles behind what is given in the Gita. So I would recommend like Burijan's overview
of the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. That very much gives a very nice understanding of behind the whole thing. That along with then the study of Prabhupada's books, you know, I mean the purports themselves and all that. So that should be gone through quite nicely. So you should have devotees that, if you want to establish education, you have to have devotees who specialize in education. So you have to have devotees that they study and prepare for these things. So that what they're speaking on is realization. But they should actually have that ability.
You know, to teach.
Yeah. Because the point is that realization comes from service. Means when you have knowledge, but that doesn't naturally turn into realization. It only turns into realization when there's service. So the combination of knowledge and service becomes realization. This is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Is that when the sambit potency, which is knowledge, is combined with the vladini potency, which is service, then the sandini potency gives revelation. Right? So therefore, somebody can study, but when they teach that, if that teaching gives them that realization, which you can see by the quality of the class and the quality of their behavior, you know, they're not proud, they're humble. This is just their brand. This is their service. Those are the people that can do that as a basically full-time service.
Mm-hmm.
And those who can't, they should study, and they may teach parts, but it shouldn't be their full-time service. Otherwise, there'll be no realization.
Mm-hmm.
One should find their area of service so that they gain realization. It's a very important point. Is your leaders have to be able to understand what service goes with what person so that they're gaining realization. That's the whole purpose of the Vedic culture, is to gain realization.
Mm-hmm.
So depending upon one's conditioned nature, one follows a particular path that one gains the realization from that. So someone does that as a brahmachari, someone is a grihastha, someone is a sannyasi, someone is a businessman, someone is a teacher, someone is a manager.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to see that. But it first must start from understanding the philosophy and understanding the devotional culture, the Vaishnava culture. So nectar devotion explains the culture. Then in the Pancharatra Pradeep, the ISKCON deity worship book, then in the first and fifth chapter, that describes the culture.
And this should be part of the...
That should be part of the... Yeah. Well, it should be part of the training, whether you put it into the Bhakti Shastri. Prabhupada's original Bhakti Shastri, he mentioned Archan Padati as part of the Bhakti Shastri.
Mm-hmm.
Though it's not considered so much now. I think later he put more on the philosophy, but he expected it to be there. That's why he asked if the book be written.
Mm-hmm.
But the original book that was written didn't give much explanation. So the Pancharatra Pradeep was written to explain more. So the first chapter then deals with Abhigamana, or approaching the temple. So all the activities that everybody does, waking, taking their bath, and tilak, and that, and what's behind it. Then the fifth chapter is all the interactions, all the services. You know, interaction with guests, with the devotees, with, you know, chanting, hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping, I mean, not worshipping the deity, but the Tulsi, the Dham, seven aspects. So if you understand nectar devotion, and those two chapters, means the first part of nectar devotion, that, and those two chapters of the Pancharatra Pradeep, then one has a very clear understanding of the Vaishnava etiquette and culture.
Mm-hmm.
Then one can see that in the Bhagavatam. I mean, Bhagavatam is just a practical application of a philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So those should be trained. And everyone should be trained in the principles of what is Brahmacharya. You know, means of the simplicity. Means, what is it? Tapasya Brahmacharena. So then the austerities of the body, the mind, and the words. You know, so respect. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's those few chapters. I mean, there's few verses that explain that. So then there's, it goes through. What is austerity of the body? Respect of authority, respect for elders, respect for the cows, cleanliness, celibacy. Then austerity of the words, then speaking what is according to Shastra, you know, speaking truthfully, speaking in a way that the other person can appreciate it.
Mm.
And then austerity of the mind means being pure, not being duplicitous, being straightforward in dealings. Like these are there, so everybody should be taught in that. The whole Vedic culture is based on these principles, you know, it means knowledge of the scriptures, austerity, cleanliness, you know, these are main elements. If those aren't there, you don't have grihasthas, you don't have anaprasthas, you don't have it. No one should fool themselves.
Mm.
That's the first thing you should know. First class brahmachari makes a first class grihastha. The second class brahmachari makes a second class grihastha. Third class brahmachari makes a third class grihastha. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Like that.
And if it's not because I'm a lousy brahmachari, therefore I should be a grihastha.
That is the modern concept, is everyone's going to get married, so why bother with brahmacharya?
Mm-hmm.
So this is lousy grihasthas breaking down the pristine Vedic system that Prabhupada gave us. Because Prabhupada's point was, is you become a first-class brahmachari, then you have two kinds of brahmacharis. The upakulvana, which means he has the knowledge, but not the realization.
Mm.
but not the realization.
Then,
can you just tell him to either face another direction and not be quite so loud?
It's not.
No, it is, but it's just a little cutting.
Yeah. I do this time every evening. Do I do this every time? This time every evening.
There's a direct line.
Yeah.
Someone who can chant nicely, you actually need a bit of a rasp and cut. The Vedic mantras actually sound better that way.
Huh?
Like that. So he has a good voice for that. He can carry very well, but just if we were in a direct line. Huh? If it hits the roof somewhere, then it won't bother you.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that without these principles, you don't actually have Vedic culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So then many of the human principles get compromised. So then you see that our own culture starts to take on the quality of the Western culture. It means our grihastas, you know, divorces just as much as the karmas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our children being totally bent out of shape and you know, socially dysfunctional is just as bad as the non-devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Because the parents were not trained before they got married. The idea is you're going to get a grihastha, like every day's grihastha is automatic, right? I've seen people, one day they're a brahmachari, they don't know anything about kids. The next day they get married and suddenly they're over here telling the teachers how to deal with children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just automatic. If you somehow know the mechanically worked out how to conceive a child, you're expert in child raising. But it doesn't work like that. It works like that for the animals, because Krishna in the heart is telling them what to do. So a dog is a perfect dog. A cow is a perfect cow. But a human has to be trained to be a perfect human. So that element is very important. So therefore, everybody, even if they're grihasthas already, they joined as grihasthas or they found themselves now, it's never too late, because the point is we're dealing with souls, you know, and the conditioned nature is secondary. So one can always train.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to see the principles behind. What is it? Cleanliness. Right? Now, cleanliness is very important. If the external cleanliness is not there, then how will the internal be there? Like that. So therefore, one is trained in cleanliness. Then someone is trained in respect. If there's no respect, how does it work? Nothing works. You know? It's very popular now as no one respects anybody, but no one gets respected either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see, grihasthas don't respect the sannyasins or the temple presidents, but the children don't respect them.
Mm-hmm.
The wife doesn't respect the husband. The husband doesn't respect the wife. So then what is the basis of the culture? There must be something on which the culture is based on.
That's holding everything together.
Yeah, there must be something. So these are the basic principles. You know, cleanliness, truthfulness, all these different things. There is a religion. So when religion is the culture, you know, it's synonymous. It's just how you use the words and whether you're applying to the mood or whether you're applying to the rules. You know, generally when you say religion, it means the rule aspect. When you say culture, you mean the mood aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So everyone should be trained in that. You know, and especially those who are newer or not married, they should be trained very nicely. Once they understand those principles, then you get to the point we've mentioned before. You have two first-class brahmacharis. The naistika means that he has heard the knowledge and he's realized it. So just the process of hearing it and performing the menial service as a brahmachari, he's come to the realization. So he's gotten what is necessary. So then they can remain brahmachari. Then the upakurvana is also first class. He has the knowledge, he has first class service attitude, you know, respect for the authorities, everything, first class. But the realization is not deep enough. So therefore, he takes up the practice of grihastha life, and through that service, that knowledge combined with that service, that will give the realization. So then, at the end of the day, then the upakurvana, going through the grihastha ashram, the naistika brahmachari, they come to the same standard. Like that. That's all one wants. Like that. So those who actually understand the Vedic system, it doesn't matter if you're a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, whatever's best for you, depending upon what you've already done. think if you've already gone through the grihastha scene in previous lifetimes and understood it, why you should go through in this life? Like if you've already done your MA, you know, you go on to the PhD. You know, you don't have to do a BA again or get a high school diploma or anything like that. You just go for that. If it's already done, you go to the next one. So if someone is able to learn as a brahmacharya, it's already been done. And if they haven't, if they need to go through it, means then they're doing it, then it means they haven't finished it. And that's all. So what's the problem? The thing is due to material identification, then brahmacharis and sannyasis will say grihastha life is maya, and the grihasthas will say, oh, these brahmacharis and grihasthas aren't really brahmacharis, I mean, aren't brahmacharis and sannyasis, you know, they should be honest and all this. And it just makes, it makes a social hell, because neither party actually understand what they're talking about at all. Because the point is the varnashram system, specifically the daiva varnashram, is meant to give everyone the opportunity to get rid of their material disease. You know, this would be just like, let us say we had some people, they heard something about medicine, they've learned a little something about medicine, they have a cold. Then they hear someone else who has a fever and he's taking different medicine, so they all laugh at that. Ah ha ha, he's taking fever medicine. But he's got a fever, he doesn't have a cold. So depending upon the conditioning, someone has to one has to purify one's brahmachari conditioning, someone their grihastha conditioning, someone their vanaprastha conditioning, someone their sannyas conditioning, someone their brahman conditioning, or kshatriya, or vaishya, or shudra conditioning. Means the material conditioning has to be removed. So therefore the emphasis in the beginning has to be on understanding these fundamental principles of the philosophy and the culture. Like that. Then, from there, once that is done, then that opens the doors for all the other ashrams and all the varnas, like that. Once they learn that, they learn the devotional process, they learn the deity worship, you know, they learn the philosophy, you know, sadhana, they're practicing it nicely. Then one can see, okay, this person is practicing nicely, they'll remain a brahmachari. So then what are the different ways that they can engage themselves? Someone else, they need to become a grihastha. Okay, now the training becomes more in line with that, the grihastha, and then hearing from grihasthas who are experienced, who are successfully able to manage their grihastha life, you know, and they're being Krishna conscious, the family members are successful and Krishna conscious and all that. So then they can hear from them and from others, whoever can speak on the topic, you know, with some understanding. Then, you know, like that. Or then they can go into details of pujari, teaching, preaching, you know, trainings, all these things, or management, business, or different arts.
Are we talking now about, like, after the first, like, initial training process?
Yeah. Means the initial training, everybody should go through some basic stuff. It doesn't matter. Even they're already married, still they should understand what it is in their marriage that makes it work as a devotee. Mm. You know? What it is that makes it function, you know.
But then after that, then there's kind of
Start to specialize. Yeah. Yeah, and you'll find that there's certain things that, even though it's more specialized, it deals with many people in general. Like, let's say, leadership will deal with a lot of different things, you know, because Brahmins have to lead, Kshatriyas have to lead, Vaishyas have to lead. You know, within the ashram, one has to lead. You know, so I mean, there's many things that will be common amongst all, and then there's going to be things that are just specific pretty much for one of the things. Mm-hmm. So then it needs to be just worked out how that works. So the main thrust is you can, you know, very easily go ahead with is just that training in the philosophy, the culture, and the deity worship and the ritual that is common to everybody. Then one has to find those who are good in the other fields. Now, if you really want this to work nicely, you also have to train from the top down. It means those who are going to lead and teach, they have to be trained. Then everything else falls into place. Mm-hmm. Like that. That's very, very important. We should not underestimate the training of those who will lead. Mm-hmm. like that means those who are Brahmins, who are supposed to be teachers, they should be knowledgeable. And they should be able to see that knowledge relationship to what Prabhupada teaches. Ideally, is you can teach many of these principles through Prabhupada's books. Like you could teach a whole management course through Prabhupada's books. Generally, we turn to Kavi and other such persons. You know, because, you know, they've spent the time and gone through the trouble to sit down and think about and document the various elements that are there. But those elements are there in their natural form in the Bhagavatam, you know. Difficulty comes is like this. Let us say I take, in the Ayurveda, then one of the cures for medicine is the bark, the powdered bark off a quinine tree. Now in that powdered bark there's probably many, many ingredients there, you know, just naturally there. So then the allopath comes along, sees this, analyzes the quinine bark, and figures out what is the active ingredient. Then isolates the active ingredient and puts that in a pill, right, called quinine. Now, they both will get rid of malaria, but there's a slight difference. You take the quinine bark, there's no side effects. You take the quinine itself, the isolated quinine, there are side effects, you know, like that. So when you isolate the principles of, let's say, management out of the culture, then in applying them, sometimes there can be side effects. But if you understand the principle, how it fits into the whole culture, what is its place, then there's generally less or minimal side effects. So therefore, ultimately, all the instruction has to come back through the teachings of the Acharya and connect itself to the Lord like that. Then it works nicely. Otherwise, I've seen myself, there was a very dynamic example of this. There was a devotee. He was a teacher for teacher for teaching, you know, Kaviism to the interested parties. You know, he would hold seminars for the common people who wanted to learn about Kavi's principles. And Kavi's principles are all on management. This person was the temple president of one of our temples. He had to leave being the temple president because the devotees are so dissatisfied with his management. Yeah, okay. So so the point is here are the principles, because you take the principles of Kavi, and there's people who are managers, they read it and go, oh, you know, they just didn't think of it like that. And it improves their management. If you give these principles to someone who's not a manager, it doesn't matter how much you give them, you still won't become a manager. And besides that is you have to be able to apply them. So now how do you apply them? So that is best done through the medium of the culture. So then if we see how Prithu Maharaj, you know, how Rishabh Dev, how all these different great kings and that, how they apply these principles of management, then you see how it perfectly applies and why people are satisfied. Right? Because management, there's no politics behind it. Politics are used with those who are not up to the standard. Politics is not the principle of management. You know? The kings don't function on politics. They use politics because there are people who are too materialistic to control themselves. So therefore, with a political person, you have to deal politically. You know, but otherwise, it's not the principle. Therefore, you see, Bhagavatam, that's pure management. It's just pure how you deal with people. If you look at it, you can see it's totally just relationships, how the kings dealt, how they interface, like that. And if you get into each one, if one knows the culture, one can gain from there the culture, or if one has, you know, yeah, then one can see that the culture is there, what's going on. You know, how the interaction, how, let's say, Dhruva was chosen to sit on the throne. His father first checked the qualities of Dhruva, whether he was qualified. When he was satisfied he was qualified, then he spoke to the elders. So he's not just taking his own opinions. He takes the elders of the who know management and who are the ones that will have to work with him after the king goes. They were satisfied. And then when they're satisfied, then they go and they check what the people will think. Right? But this is not by just modern democratic voting. This is they go out and they have their ways. You know, people go out and just start talking about it. You know, the king, his son, and he's getting old, you know, maybe it's about time, or I wonder if they're going to put Dhruva on the throne, you know. I mean, these are the technicalities of politics that you use. You put out spies, and they go out into the public and start talking like this. Then they see, what is the people's reaction? The people go, oh no, Dhruva, forget it. Then they know the people don't like him. Mm-hmm. If they go, oh yes, that would be wonderful, he has such nice qualities, this and that. So then they know. So the public is taking, they know what the public has to say. The king won't function without the public being satisfied. He doesn't necessarily do it through all these systems of voting that can give rise to great, you know, injustice, because the voting is not going properly, you know, and all this can, all these different things. It's just what is the natural feelings. Then after that, then he decided to install Dhruva on the throne. So then if you want to put someone in as a temple president, that means the person of authority, then he should check the qualities of the person. He sees they have the qualities to be a temple president. They should check with the leaders of the zone. What do they feel about this person being the temple president here? Then if they're satisfied, then you start asking around with the devotees what they think. Right? And then when that's there, then you know, okay, and then the person's put into place. Then it will work. But otherwise, we can use other systems. You know, we can use the French Revolution system. You go to the people first. And you get them all fired up. And then you make a political move to put whoever you want in. You know, or just the person who was a manager before tries to stuff in someone who he thinks is going to follow the same things that he did, and he'll feel his work goes on. Right? Or, you know, you just go by what the leaders say and not care for one's own opinion or the opinion of the devotees. You know, but you have to have all three. Then it's perfect. So one may say, well, that's not very practical, but then how practical is it having a temple president that is not, either doesn't function properly or the devotees don't like it? So the point is ultimately we have to see what is practical is according to our values. This is very important. So the whole concept of the Vedic culture is changing the values so that they're in line with God's values. So when those values are imbibed, then the culture continues, the culture goes on. So if one values culture, then one will follow the practicality that gives that culture. Otherwise, just pragmatic minimalism, that is, of course, the perfection of methodology of the businessmen. The businessmen aren't the leaders of society. Those who are the intellectuals and those who understand the social fabric, they're the ones that function, and they function according to the scripture. Like that. Business, you just have to do whatever's the most practical and make your money. But if you apply those principles of management, which unfortunately is all the books on modern management are all for businessmen. There's not one for how to run a country. No one's writing for that. You know, there's no, the Prime Minister's book on how to run your country. No, they're all on how to make money. They're all business management. So the underlying principles are the same as that a Kshatriya will use. But the detail of application may be very different. Therefore, is another problem if we take from the outside, because they've written for their own purposes. So one may take some principles from there and then look into the Vedic literature and then see, oh, here's the thing. It means, what is it? Seven habits of successful people, right? Prithu Maharaj was also quite successful. So now if you find those habits in Prithu, then one should leave the seven habits and just take it how the Bhagavatam takes as there. One may organize it like that to put it out, but one must describe it according to how Prithu applies it, rather than how Kavipada applies it.
A Prabhupada.
Yeah. Yeah. is Prabhupada instead of Kavipada. And like that. So it's very important. If you want it to work, the culture has to be part of the overall scene. Because education is for training in culture. The intellectuals are working by the culture. They see the philosophy, and they see what is the rules, and then how to best apply it. And they're studied in it. Then your other leaders who do the management, who actually organize the society, they work on exactly the same principles, but they are more into the hands-on, while the intellectuals are not. They're more into advising. They both have the same body of knowledge, but they both must work together, because the administrator knows what's practically going on, so he can give. So then he can give some focus to what the intellectual's advice has to say. And the administrator, because he's always in the hands-on, sometimes he misses the forest for the trees. So then he needs the intellectuals to give that balance, because that's all they're always dealing in this, on the theory, theology like this. So sometimes he may miss a fine point. It's practical to get it done, but it may bring some other aspect that maybe today we won't notice, but tomorrow we'll notice. So therefore that combination is very important. Then those who do business must be engaged, must have been trained in the culture. Otherwise, if they don't identify with that culture, why would they work within it or give their money in it? Right? And the artists, then all of their different activities must be in line with these other three. So they must also be trained in the culture. Then it works very nicely. Mm. Then everybody has their part and everybody knows that this all works together. But the emphasis has to be on the leaders. That they follow it.
And they train properly.
Yeah. Means when you're describing it, every individual must concentrate on themselves. No one has to worry about anybody else. The Vedic system of training culture is first to understand your position, then how you interact with others. Right? That's the second part. Then of the people who can do that, exclusively out of people who can understand what they should do and how to interact with others. Then from amongst those you see who can actually understand the overall. Then you train them in that. That's the third phase. Mm-hmm. But those who cannot accept their own nature and to follow and relate with others according to their nature and according to the other person's nature should never be taught how to manage society. Mm-hmm. It starts from the individual. The Vedic culture starts from the individual. What he does, it works out. Which is very different from the Western. The Western is you just start with the overall, and then you may work into, okay, I want to do that, what I should do to do that. But the Vedic is it starts from the grassroots. I as a person, what is my position? What are the qualities I must have according to my position? How do I relate to others? Right? Because even someone is a king, he still has a mother. And he has to respect his mother just the same as the common citizen has to respect his. He has a teacher. He has to respect his teacher, just as a common citizen has to respect their teacher. Right? He has to be, you know, kind to those who have difficulties, just like the common person does. So it starts with the individual. Like that. Then from there, he has the ability or the nature to understand the whole thing. And without bias, then see that everybody is situated nicely according to the facilities they require. That is a leader. But if we just start off, well, until we politically make everything correct, then we can't function properly. But that, every political movement says that. We cannot be ourselves until we politically work everything out. You know? But that's not how it works. Otherwise, you know, this planet would already be perfection. We've had so many of those revolutions and everything, and it's still going on with chaos. Because society starts from the individual. The individual knowing who they are and following their own nature and relating to everybody else according to their nature. Then you have a culture. Mm-hmm. Then it's just a matter of how to manage that to make sure everybody's taken care of. So that's the higher principle. So that's how you get leaders. So when you sit down in the class and you start talking about how the individual should behave, And they start immediately trying to deflect things off into, well, until we get, you know, the management together, the GBC or the sannyasis or the gurus or, you know, somebody else together before I can be together. First just make a list of all those people, and they are the ones not to be trained as leaders. Mm. Or they have the conditioned nature to be leaders, but it's heavily polluted. So they have to be purified. Once they're purified, then they can help, be useful. But in this unpurified state where they see everybody else and not themselves, how you can... A leader means he has to be able to affect changes in others. If you can't affect changes in yourself, how you affect changes in others? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how you go about finding who are leaders. You start with the individuals, those who actually understand it and can apply it in their life. From those devotees, then you start to bring them forward and train them as leaders. Mm-hmm. That's the Vedic system. Yeah. And we see it works, it brings out perfect leaders. Yeah. You know? And we say, well, we got to be practical, we got to manage the temple. We've been saying that for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. So we'll do that. But the leaders should start to be trained. And whoever is the leaders now, they have the nature to actually lead, then they'll naturally be able to understand themselves as individuals. And if they can't understand that, then eventually those who can, as they become trained, then they should take over. You know? Yeah. The practical is based on practical. Practical gets down to practical. It's not, I'm a Prabhupada's disciple, therefore I should be in charge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or I'm the senior person in the temple, I should be in charge. So who have the qualities to lead, they should be in charge. Yeah. At the same time, it's not that I'm more passionate than the other guys, therefore I'm going to butt my way into the situation and take over. That's also to be avoided, because a leader is respectful. If he can't be respectful to others, no one will respect him.
How do we have to start, since it seems like we don't have teachers even who can teach these principles yet?
Yogurt. You need some, and then you can make the whole thing.
Okay, yeah.
It basically comes from studying Prabhupada's books.
Okay.
That becomes more... It comes down to those who can understand this point, then they can start to develop. Because it'll take time. It's not expected it's going to happen overnight.
No.
It'll take some time. It's too small.
Talked about Bhakti Shastri Bhakti Vaibhava Samabhava, no,
Vedanta
Vedanta Samabhava. How does that fit? Is that after?
No, I would do those all simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
There should be, basically, I would say, that is your philosophical training.
Mm.
Then there must be the cultural and occupational training. So both need to go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the temple life itself is training in this.
Yeah.
You know, it should be. In other words, those who live in the temple should be persons who can imbibe these and follow and set example.
Mm-hmm. And no one should have lived in the temple.
Yeah, and if they can't come up to the standard, they shouldn't live in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like one of the things that is there in the Gurukul system, you know, for training, is that someone goes to the Gurukul, and in the old tradition, for 1 year they're on probation. And within a year, but latest by a year, then whoever is running the ashram has to say whether they fit or not. And then just say, I'm sorry, you won't fit.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yes, we can train you. So when someone who wants to take advantage of the training in the temple, then it should first be seen, do they fit into the temple life or not. If they don't, it doesn't mean they can't come to the training, just they wouldn't live in the temple.
Mm.
That's all. You may have some temporary courses, you know, 2 weeks during some, you know, school break or during, you know, some job holidays or summer vacation. You know, you have a couple of months for students. But at the end of that, then they just go back to whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And if it's seen that they actually fit, then they could be invited. But when your temple devotees themselves then inspire those in the community, then there's much more respect like that. Also, you'll find it's much easier for someone who's already working within the, you know, the social, outside social structure, the greater social structure. You'll generally find when they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, they'll spend more time in the temple and taking part more than someone who was in the temple and moved out. So it's better for such persons they don't move in the first place, because then the spiritual life will stay more nice.
Mm-hmm.
Or it should be understood that, okay, you're coming, you want to get married, this and that, you come for X amount of time for training, 1 year, 3 years, and it's understood after that time, then you'll move into a situation that's more fitting your liking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for some time there's that good brahmachari training. And then after that, then you can move into that. So then there will be, the aspect will be prepared. The brahmachari training cannot be compromised.
Mm.
But some training in other fields can be there. Like that. So it's, you might find that better they finish their training outside. For such persons who knows that they'll need that, better they finish their training outside before they come into the temple life.
Mm.
Like if they figure they want a particular kind of, you know, they see themselves in a particular kind of job in the future, there they finish that training. Then come in and live as a devotee, a temple devotee, for however long it's stipulated, some months or some years. Then they can just go out, they have the qualifications. And for those who see, no, I just want to get into this, you know, the preaching and the training and that kind of thing, then you have to test them to see that actually is their nature. You have to be sure of that. And it should be understood that that's what it is. So later on they can't say, I wasn't trained in this. It takes some maturity. But you have to start somewhere. That's what Prabhupada was saying. We have to create a class of intellectuals.
Right.
That's because once you create that, everything else happens. Because intellectual is trained, the Kshatriya is the Vaishya's the Shudra. So until they're in place, your culture is not in place. So basically, if you look around, so much talk is about social development.
Who's training?
Yeah. But now let us look at it. When Prabhupada was here, preaching was very much of a main thrust. Deity worship, cleanliness, Brahminical culture, simplicity, study, philosophy. All these things are very much promoted. Simple lifestyle.
Hmm.
Right? You had too many pujaris. You know, you had too many people to do all these different things. And these are all Brahminical culture. If you look at today, do we have enough pujaris? Do we have enough teachers? Do we have enough preachers?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the Brahminical culture has been neglected and not encouraged. And then, naturally from that, then there's a problem of social development. Because if there's no head, nothing else can develop. They can have social, how are you saying? Putting it in kind of their terminology. You can have social development meetings until the cows come home, and there'll be no social development. Until the Brahmins are in place, there are no Kshatriyas or Vaishyas. You can't be. I mean, you can have businessmen, but they're not supporting the community.
They're not part of the culture, they're just...
Yeah, and you're not part of the culture. Right? So the whole, they're just doing their own thing. They know how to do business, they're doing it. And it's kind of when the devotees get it together, then they'll take part.
Mm.
You know? They're not averse, it's just they're being practical. So it really has to be looked at very seriously. What is actual social development? Because a businessman is a businessman. You hand him $100 bucks today, he'll come back tomorrow with $150. There's no question.
It doesn't matter if it's good or bad times or war or peace or
means
whatever.
They're making money. It means those devotees who have business abilities and have tried to apply them are doing business. So that leaves you three other varnas that aren't established. So now we see Brahmins aren't held up. Kshatriyas aren't. So who's jumping up and down say we were never given a chance, never supported, never this, never that? Who says like that? Brahmins are independent.
Mm.
Kshatriyas are independent. Vaishyas are independent. So
Tony's one.
Yeah. So therefore, one has to really seriously consider when we talk social development, what are we actually talking about? In other words, we're talking about establishing leadership that can protect those devotees who feel unprotected. But to say, well, we were never given money to set up and all that, no one gave those, you know, millionaires in Alachua any money either. And we have guys in Alachua, we have devotees all around the world, millionaires. While everybody else has been jumping up and down and talking this and that, they've just been out making doing business. So it really has to be looked at. It's not just what everybody says, therefore it is. It means you have to look at the reality of the situation. It means if someone is selling stickers 20 years ago and someone is still selling stickers today, it means they're a salesman. Mm. They may be a very small-time businessman. You know, like you have here in India, you have the guy in the pawn shop. You know, you come, you know, he's 20 years old, he's selling pawn. You come back, he's 60 years old, he's selling pawn. That's all the ability of his business. But if he has any greater business talents, as you know, he may start off selling stickers today, but you come back after some weeks and months and he's hired devotees to sell stickers for him. You know? And then after a while he's manufacturing his own stickers, he saves money, and then he has his own transport business to transport the stickers around, and he has his own, you know, he just expands like that. I mean, that's the way business works. So those with business abilities are already using it. Right? No one's holding back the business. And the leaders, unless they follow the culture, they can't please anybody. Being intellectual or being administratively astute doesn't mean that one can satisfy the general populace. One has to be cultured. One has to be philosophically grounded. Seriously consider these things. If you really want to get down into it, then it's a very serious study of what are the training of the various brahminical trainings, the kshatriya trainings, the vaishya and the shudra. But, and certain things you just learn. Business, you learn from a businessman. You don't learn from a school. Mm. There's no businessman come out of the Harvard School of Business Management. Business managers come out of the Harvard School of Business Management. Which businessmen hire?
Mm. The sutras.
Huh?
The sutras.
Yeah, the sutras. Their art is business. Just like administrators. Their art, they know administration. Their art is management. You know? Or fighters. Like policemen. The sutras. They're the sutras of the administrators. Mm. But their art is martial. So if we look at the system, we'll find that basically it's very... Basically, everybody is an artist, and then a few have these other qualities, because you only need a few. You know, you only need a few teachers, you only need a few administrators, you only need a few businessmen, and then the whole society works. So if one applies this according to Daivabhavan Ashram, it doesn't matter, because the whole point is we follow the varnas and ashrams just to purify ourselves, to go back to Godhead. And what is our particular medicine doesn't matter. Whatever our disease is, we take the medicine for that disease. And no one sits around and, you know, no one considers that, you know, fever medicine is better than cold medicine, and that's better, definitely better than stomach medicine. You know, and, you know, someone else has to take, you know, ear drops or something like that, and, you know, they're real weird, you know. Like that, it's just whatever your disease is, you take that, and then you get healthy. So real health is spiritual health. So for the Vaishnavas, they couldn't care less. But within that, there is natural social etiquette. It means the person who is this temple president must be respected by the temple devotees. Otherwise, the art of management doesn't take place. When you have a leader, you have to have followers. When you have a teacher, there must be students. You know? At the same time is for the students, there must be someone to guide them. You know, where there's, you know, some general devotees, you must have someone who's sheltering them. Mm. So that's the other side. So generally we look at it from the top down because of the, you know, Western imperialistic viewpoint. But the Vedic viewpoint is that it goes both ways. It's a balance, 50-50. A good leader then is able to protect good followers. Mm. And good followers are able to follow a good leader. So they each have their thing.
Mm. What if now we mainly attract those of super qualities in any case, isn't it? I mean, to a great majority.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But then they should be... We don't necessarily have to train them in the Sudra arts. We have to train them how to, in their situation, remember Krishna.
Mm.
You know, why we should... You know, we don't need to open, you know, a branch of our society of, you know...
What do you call it?
You know, yeah, something like that. We just train them how to be good at what they can do. If someone is an accountant, we train them how to be an accountant for the Lord, or how to live a lifestyle that is in line with the Lord.
Mm.
So they go to the office, they do their accounts, they do it just the way that they've learned it. You know, that's fine. It doesn't matter. But they learn how to live in their home what is actually a grihastha rather than a grihamedi. You know? They learn how to associate with devotees, how to practice Krishna consciousness themselves. And then that side you don't have to worry about.
Mm.
See, Brahmins teach others the theory and the practical of Brahminical training. They teach the Kshatriyas, they teach them the theory and the principles, the practically applied principles of their art, of their management. But they don't teach them, they don't get into detail unless they're specialized like Dronacharya.
Mm.
Business, no question, any Brahmin teaches anybody business. We're in business, we're in business. Like that. The training system is not for training in business. The training system is for training in culture, so that when you do your business, you don't completely just do anything to screw anybody to get money. The actual tendency is a businessman will do anything for money. But they have to have some culture, so they restrict themselves. And there's a limit to what they'll do to make money. And for the Shudras, their art doesn't need to be learned from the Brahmins. You learn music from the musician. You learn painting from the painter. But the philosophy and the theology behind music, art, and these things, that you learn from the teacher, from the Brahmin. Like that. So if that is understood also, that then is how broad we deal, how we make our educational thing. So the temple can only be expected to work on that platform. Now, if someone wants to set up a whole vocational training center, and they have those abilities, know how to do it, then that's fine. But they should have those abilities. And if not, there's so much going on. The karmas are doing a great job. They've been working at it for years, so they do a great job. Why not just take advantage of what they do? But the philosophical principles behind anything they do, still, that can be learned from the scriptures. And then that also sets what will be the scope of it. Like I see in Bombay and Chopati, is the students there, the community itself, because they know, it depends. So those who know the person, they decide whether they go into the temple or not. The community itself decides, because they're their own children. They know the child, so they and the temple sees, so between them they discuss and decide whether they move into the temple or not. They also know the nature, they know what's going on in the environment, and they suggest different areas of training, you know, education and things like that. And then when they finish their education, then they decide they move into the temple, or do they just go straight into their profession. Like that. And even someone moves into the temple, seeing that he'll be good in the temple, if after 3-4 years they decide to get married, then the community helps line them up. Because the community, they work with land, they work with business, they work with all these different things, so they help them get set up. So the community does it, not the temple. It means grihasthas take care of grihasthas. You know? And the temple devotees give spiritual guidance, give example, enthuse in this way. Give training, cultural, the theoretical and all these things. But amongst themselves, the grihasthas take care of the grihasthas. Because that's the culture, that's the way it works. Problem is they're expecting those few brahmacharis in the temple. It's like like it's being said that, you know, grihasthas aren't being taken care of, but now how do they want to take care of themselves? Where's the money come from? You know? Who's going out and selling all the stickers? The brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis. You know? So the whole thing is you can't run a society, like, you can't run a social system like that. Grihasthas have to generate their own money. If they're grihasthas, that their lifestyle is that of being temple devotees, but then they live off of what the simple facility that the temple can provide.
That's like brahmacharis practice.
Yeah, they're practically like brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, just to have, you know, they may have the little separate facility, that's all. But otherwise they eat at the temple and they do the things in the temple. And those who can't live like that, then should live in some other facility. You know, it's not like, well, I've been doing Sankirtan for 20 years now, what do I got out of it? No, it means, yes, what do you get? You don't have any realization, so therefore maybe you should have been doing something else. If you did it, it was nice, it was good, but what was the motive behind it? Was it to please Krishna? If it is, then therefore 20 years you went to please Krishna, so what do you get out of it? You should have gotten out of it, Krishna's being pleased with you, and therefore you're satisfied. And if you find that that's not the case, then there was some other motive behind it. And then that is the problem. It's not that the temple authorities can't take care. The problem is we had other material desires. Mm-hmm. So those things should be recognized in the beginning. That someone can do that kind of, can do preaching and take part, but at the same time is take care of their own material desires that are there, rampant in the heart. If they can't control them, then they should address them. If they can control them, then it's taken care of. So it's means, you know, many will say we have to be practical, but this is the practical reality, and this practical reality is very painful.
It's the only thing that works, isn't it?
But it's what works. It works in India. There's millions of people in India following it. Works perfectly for them, and it's not just. And one may say, well, that's because they're Indians. But the problem is you take these Indians and put them in the West, and you don't see Indian beggars in the streets. They run all the businesses, you know, they take over. I mean, the Indians, you know, the simple Gujarati villagers took over the diamond market in Antwerp from the Hasidic Jews. Now that is an accomplishment. Right? All the motels in America are owned by the Patels. Right, you know, you go into, you know, London, and all the electronic shops are all run by Indians. You know, so it's just they're using it over there. There, many of them you'll find they're still following the same Indian diet. It's still, you can buy rice and dal and sabzi. You know, the women still wear the little red dots on their forehead and wear their saris, and they still function in the house as they would in India. And they're making money hand over fist. So somehow or another, we as Westerners may say it doesn't work, but that's due to our lack of education. Indians go over there and make it work really good. You know? I mean, how many doctors and all these different things, professionals, are Indians? Like that. So they're applying it. So it's not that it doesn't work.
Yeah, so many times he stresses in his books, in the Vedic consciousness, like Brahmacharya, he lives under the care of his spiritual master.
Yeah.
And he receives training in the class, like that way.
Well, because independence is very much valued by the Western culture. Independence, position, authority, wealth, facilities, influence. So that values are being given to the new generation. When I joined as a brahmachari, there wasn't that at all. You know, your schedule was there, your set course of training was there, you were completely taken care of.
So do you think it's very good for a brahmachari, even though he may have a very, like doing sankirtan and this, it's good for him to still have a personal association of his, in that way, or do you think the system, the setup of sankirtan, the structure of, sadhana like that is good enough, but do you think also like this brahmacharya, they don't need the personal guidance also?
It means the spiritual master we have to mean is someone who trains.
Yeah.
so that if the Sankirtan leaders, the temple commander, the temple presidents, the senior devotees, they're the spiritual masters.
Yeah, we're screwed up by this idea that it's someone who comes from the other part of the world and he gives you diksha. And of course, it's
means that aspect may be there. The diksha aspect is there, but the fundamental part is siksha. It's siksha. So it's the thing is, if we understand that, then we take advantage of that, and then that shelter is given, and then one does nicely, one takes care, and then it works very, very nicely. We're supposed to become independent-minded. Doesn't mean that the activities have to be independent. I can be doing exactly what the next person is doing because I want to do it. So I'm being independent. If you have 10 people that are doing what they like, they're being independent. Like you go to a ski club, everybody's skiing. But they all feel that they've independently made that choice and they're individuals. And if you told them, oh, they're all just, you know, just clones and they're all doing the same thing and they're all brainwashed, they'd all say, well, you're crazy. You know, we don't have to do this, we don't want it. But we want to do this. We value it. We like it. It's in the same way as devotees. They're doing because they've chosen it. They like it. Even though they may be doing the same thing. To get you to the second part, and the second phase of figuring out what you can train, what you have people for, what direction.
Mm.
That would take some work and you have to.
Some time?
Yeah. You have to see what devotees you have there, what's the situation, what is the direction you want to go, how big you can take. Essentially is you have to be able to train leaders, preachers and leaders, and train others just how to be good devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you can do details beyond that, that's fine. But if not, if you have that, then you actually will develop native culture.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty good if you can just do it.
Yeah. That's the thing. Just train what you know. You have somebody who is a good manager, they can train in that. You have someone who's a good preacher, they can train in that. Good pujaris, they train in that. Good cook, they can train in that.
Mm.
You know, whatever you have someone good at, train that. And what you're missing, you can get people or that, do it. And if not, don't worry about it until such time comes. They can always learn from somewhere else.
Two more questions. Do you mind if I transcribe this?